9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring today. Robert Half is here to help. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Hey, What's News listeners, this is Luke Vargas, and we want to hear from you about what you like about this show and what you want to hear more of. Whether that's more news headlines, more conversations digging into the news, or miniseries. If you're listening to this on Spotify, look for our poll under the episode description or send us an email to wnpod@wsj.com. Now, on to the show. The search for a missing Titanic sub continues as the clock ticks down for a possible rescue. Plus, the U.S. rolls out the red carpet for Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi.
What they're really looking to do is use India as a counterweight to China in a broader effort to counter Beijing's growing military and economic influence in the Indo-Pacific and the world more broadly.
And Ukraine strikes a key bridge supplying Russian troops. It's Thursday, June 22nd. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal, and here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. The U.S. Navy has sent a specialized salvage craft to a remote area of the Atlantic Ocean as the search for a missing submersible visiting the wreck of the Titanic enters its fourth day. Rescuers are continuing to focus their search for the sub on an area where Canadian aircraft detected banging noises underwater on Tuesday and Wednesday morning, though officials still don't know what was making those noises. Hopes are fading for rescuing the sub's five-person crew. Rescuers still haven't located the vessel, and according to a timeline laid out Tuesday by the Coast Guard, the emergency oxygen aboard the craft is expected to run out today. However, the Coast Guard said today that the rescue operation was still in an active search phase and that no estimate had been given for when it would shift to a recovery phase, signifying that they had given up hope of finding the crew alive. A Russian court today upheld the extended detention of Evan Gershkovich, the Wall Street Journal reporter deemed by the U.S. to be wrongfully held, ordering that he remain in Moscow's Lefortovo prison until at least August 30th. Gershkovich was detained in March while on a reporting trip and is being held on an allegation of espionage, which the Journal and the U.S. government vehemently deny. Journal Moscow bureau chief Anne Simmons was closely following this morning's hearing, and she joins me now with the very latest. All right, Anne, in the wake of this decision today, what do we know about what comes next for Evan?
Well, look, it's very difficult to know exactly what lies ahead for Evan. What we do know, as you've mentioned, is that his detention has been extended through August 30th. Now, between now and that time, Russian investigators typically would be trying to compile evidence in the case. They actually could again appeal to the court to extend Evan's pretrial detention. They, in fact, could keep doing this for up until a year and possibly longer before the case actually goes to trial. So right now, what we know is that Evan Gershkovich will remain in pretrial detention at least until August 30th.
And do we know if Evan has had any U.S. consular access during his detention?
The U.S. has been pushing for consular access to visit Evan. The U.S. government has said that it has tried or submitted three applications for consular access to Evan. In fact, Ambassador Lynn Tracy spoke after the court hearing, and she said that the U.S. government had been denied three times, and she had last seen Evan first and last time in April of this year. According to the Russian state news agency TASS, Russian Deputy Foreign Minister Sergei Rybkov told reporters that Russia actually is considering the US request for consular access to Gershkovich. The US government has said that it is continuing to press for access and also calling for Evan's immediate release. The US government has said that the charges on which Evan is being held are baseless. They have said that he is an innocent journalist who was carrying out journalistic activities when he was detained. And the US government has accused the Russian government of practicing hostage diplomacy, in the words of the US U.S. ambassador today.
That was Journal Moscow Bureau Chief Ann Simmons. Ann, thank you as always for the update.
Thank you.
Ukrainian missiles have struck a bridge playing a key role in supplying Russian troops in southern Ukraine, according to Russian and occupation officials. The overnight attack threatens to undermine Moscow's hold in the area as Ukraine continues an offensive to retake lost territory. That offensive, which began 2 weeks ago, has slowed down in recent days, with Ukraine facing significant losses due to defenses that Russia spent months putting into place. And the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission is asking smaller banks for more information about risks associated with recent bank failures in a move designed to ensure that investors have details on any spillover effects. While many financial institutions voluntarily updated their financial statements in recent months to address potential consequences from the failures, our Deputy Europe Finance Editor Quinton Webb says the SEC has found that there are firms that haven't gone far enough.
We're talking here about regional and community banks in particular, so those that hold broadly $100 billion in assets or less. And there's numerous banks that have already had these letters made public, so we know that this is underway. Our colleagues at CFO Journal spoke to a senior lawyer at the law firm Mayer Brown, Anna Pinedo, who told us that actually many companies had been wary of providing extensive disclosure on the risks they faced relating to the bank failures because they wanted to avoid the perception that they faced a greater impact than they did in reality. And she added that this may not be the end of the story.
The SEC has declined to comment. Coming up, we'll get the latest on Prime Minister Narendra Modi's state visit to the United States as Washington attempts to reduce India's ties to Russia and help position it as a counterweight to China. That story and more after the break.
ADP knows anything you hear, anything you don't hear, anything you kinda heard, anything you weren't supposed to hear and now have to pretend like you didn't, can change the world of work. From HR to payroll, ADP designs forward-thinking solutions to take on the next anything.
India is expected to purchase state-of-the-art U.S. drones and jointly produce jet fighter engines as part of a multi-billion dollar deal that the U.S. hopes will wean India off of purchasing arms from Russia. That purchase is expected to be unveiled today as Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi continues a high-profile visit to the United States. And Wall Street Journal White House reporter Sabrina Siddiqui joins me now with more on the significance of the visit. Sabrina, what is the U.S. hoping to achieve as it rolls out the red carpet for Modi here?
Well, the Biden administration has been planning for this visit for months, and for weeks they've really been highlighting what they see as a unique opportunity for the United States to capitalize on India's untapped potential. What you're hearing from some of President Biden's top aides is that this is going to be a historic visit, and they genuinely believe that the U.S.-India relationship will be one of the defining partnerships of the 21st century. That's what Biden's top national security advisor, Jake Sullivan, told reporters in the run-up to Prime Minister Modi's arrival. And what they're really looking to do is use India as a counterweight to China by deepening ties across defense, technology, climate, trade with India in a broader effort to counter Beijing's growing military and economic influence in the Indo-Pacific and the world more broadly.
And how does Washington envision India serving as that counterweight to China, as you describe it?
So I think that when you take a step back, you have to look at the big picture and where India fits into the world today. And it is now the largest country by population. There have been a lot of questions about democratic backsliding under Modi's watch, but it's still the largest democracy insofar as many still view it as one. And it's also a place where much of the population speaks English. So there's just a lot of opportunity from the perspective of the U.S. and Western allies more broadly when it comes to economic investment. So it just really is across the board a place that they believe geographically is well served to counter China's influence on the world stage and what they see as an ascendant Beijing that does need to be reined in.
Sabrina, another relationship that has been of interest to U.S. officials is Modi's stance toward Russia and its president, Vladimir Putin, which has rankled some within the U.S. government since the start of Russia's war in Ukraine. Is that likely to come up?
India has largely remained on the fence. The neutrality is rooted in deep ties to Russia. And while the Biden administration was really putting a lot of pressure in the initial stages of the war on India to be more vocal in condemning Russia and to cut back some of these military ties, they've realized that directly criticizing India actually just alienates New Delhi. And so part of this effort to strengthen ties between Washington and New Delhi is just to draw India closer and away from countries like Russia and China. It's going to be a strengthening of its partnership with the U.S. And that's the way the administration is approaching this issue.
Does that sort of carrot instead of the stick mentality toward India apply to human rights issues as well? You mentioned earlier questions about democratic backsliding in the country, something that in particular the State Department has been critical of.
You know, this has been actually a question that the Biden administration has faced repeatedly in the run-up to this visit. Many people actually see it as a curious choice to invite Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi to a state dinner, which is one of the highest diplomatic honors in Washington, specifically because President Biden has made upholding democracy and human rights such a centerpiece of his foreign policy, right? So there are a lot of problems that run deep in India with respect to human rights, but the Biden administration's view is they don't want to be seen as lecturing India, and they believe doing so would only alienate both India as well as the diaspora here, which has grown in its influence over years. So I think it will really just be something that's raised in private, but it goes without question that's something that has actually overshadowed the visit in many ways.
That was Wall Street Journal White House reporter Sabrina Siddiqui in Washington. Sabrina, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
In other news moving the world today, a federal judge is slated to hear arguments in the Federal Trade Commission's lawsuit seeking to block Microsoft's acquisition of Activision Blizzard. A ruling in the FTC's favor would temporarily prevent the two companies from merging and could doom the $75 billion proposed deal, which they have a deadline to close next month. The proceeding is a major test for the Biden administration's more aggressive approach to antitrust enforcement. Regulators in the European Union, China, and other markets have approved the transaction, while the UK's Competition and Markets Authority blocked it in April. We are exclusively reporting that activist investor Elliott is ratcheting up the pressure on NRG Energy and is now seeking to oust its CEO and other top executives, according to people familiar with the matter. Elliott disclosed in mid-May that it had taken a $1 billion stake in the power company, or about a 13% economic interest. In a public letter last month, Elliott criticized NRG's home services unit, Vivint, calling its acquisition, quote, the single worst deal in the power and utilities sector during the past decade. In an emailed statement, an energy spokeswoman said that the company looks forward to discussing its strategic plan with shareholders at an investor day scheduled later this morning, and that the board fully supports the company's CEO and management team. In a vote along party lines, the Republican-controlled U.S. House has voted to censure Democratic Representative Adam Schiff of California. Republican Representative Ana Paulina Luna of Florida, who sponsored the resolution, alleged that Schiff improperly used his prior position as chairman of the House Intelligence Committee to spread falsehoods about former President Donald Trump regarding his ties to Russia. Schiff, who led the first of the two impeachments of Trump, said that Republicans were targeting him because of his effectiveness in holding Trump accountable. While the censure carries no practical weight, it is the highest form of discipline by the House, short of expulsion. Schiff is now just the third House member to be censured since the turn of the century. And Fed Chair Jerome Powell will continue his twice yearly round of congressional testimony this morning with an appearance before the Senate's Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs Committee. Powell told a House committee yesterday that the central bank was likely to raise rates in the coming months after Fed officials left rates unchanged last week. And finally, advances in DNA testing are reshaping what constitutes a family. More than a million Americans have been conceived through artificial insemination and in vitro fertilization in the decades since the techniques emerged. And from the start, many sperm donors went on with their lives not expecting to be seen as fathers or to meet any of their offspring. But WSJ Health and Science reporter Amy Marcus says that low-cost DNA testing capable of providing genetic matches could be changing that, with the technology serving as something of an address book of fathers who never expected or wanted to be found.
DNA testing has made it hard to keep promises of anonymity that were given to donors decades ago. There is a growing number of donor-conceived adults, many of whom were informed or discovered later in life that they were donor-conceived and do want access to the identities of their biological parents. And they are working to change laws in different states that would give some types of rights and information and make it available to donor-conceived people once they reach adulthood. The biological connection that they share with members of their family is very powerful, even if they are people that they didn't know their whole lives and just meet late in life. Parenthood, fatherhood, and families constitute a combination of love, biology, and just being there for each other. And each of us has the right to sort of decide and define who we consider our parents and who we consider our families.
And that's What's News for Thursday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost effective, Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.